To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral, we could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. You want to go first, Val? No. Buster, will you go first, please?
My name is Buster Hawkins, and I'm alcoholic. Can you hear this?
Yeah.
All right, yeah, I know I'm in the right place. All I got to do is look at that table over there, and I see it. That's Hopeless Row. There's Steve and Will and John and Brian and Bill. I'm grateful to be here. You know, I say often that I'm sober by the grace of a loving God, and I stay sober. And Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to be a part of this deal, trying to do what's suggested and what's asked of me, such as be here tonight, to share with you, you know, how the 12 steps, good sponsorship, and the love and hope in these rooms and something much greater than me brought me out of that hopeless state of mind and body that I stumbled in here with some 25 years ago. And I'm grateful, you know, for those that were here, you know, when I got here. You know, people like Tom, my first sponsor, and people like Wallace and Frank and Maggie and a bunch of others that were here who helped me understand that this is a planned program of recovery. And if you do these things that Tom said, life gets better in spite of you. Because I was hopeless when I got here, and I found hope here. And I've always wanted to be able to, to come to a meeting like this or any meeting and sit in here and see somebody come through the door like I was. It was hopeless, and have that troubled look on their face and that look like everything's in chaos and the world is turned upside down, because that's the way it was when I got here. And I love putting my hand out. That's when the dots really do connect. I put my hand out and say, you know, I once was like you. You know, if you do these things, life will get better in spite of you. And take them over to the coffee pot. Get them a cup of coffee. Take them to the literature racks and the books and stuff and say this, and show them, you know, like was shown me, that there is a way out, you know. And I found in Alcoholics Anonymous a way to live life and be reasonably happy without alcohol. And that was a big jump for me. Now this chapter here, every time, you know, we've been in this chapter too, John and as Will know, and Steve and Bill on Thursday nights. And this chapter, a very spiritual chapter, it's the chapter that helps me to look at, you know, we read before in our literature that some of us, we would not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And Bill further explains that in the family afterward. He says, cling to the fact that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession we have, is the key to life and happiness for others. With it, we can avert death and misery for them. And that's exactly what happened to me. I always believed in God, but when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was something in these rooms that really attracted me. I found hope. And I listened to people talk about how bad their life had gotten as a result of drinking alcohol and the disease of alcoholism and what had happened to them, and also helped them, I heard them sit there and laugh about things that were very tragic to me. And where in the world can you go on a day like this and sit in rooms like this and talk about matters of life and death and laugh. But we laugh a lot. Your book says we're not a glum lot. We insist on enjoying life. And the reason I find for me is that I found a way out. And this was a big deal for me. You know, when I listen to people read out of We Agnostics, and I have an opportunity to share, and I hear them share, you know, a lot comes to mind. But the big deal was the power that I found in these rooms. You know, I always believed in God, but I found power in here. And I listened to people talk about how bad their life had gotten and how they found a solution. And I thought to myself, my God, if it worked for them, possibly it could work for me. And what a move for me, you know. And when I'm in this chapter, there are two people that come to mind when I have an opportunity to read or discuss this chapter. And one of them is a guy by the name of Joe Fulmer. Joe's passed on, and I believe. And Joe was from Simpsonville, South Carolina. And I had the opportunity, one of the first jobs I had on the Oceanfront Conference Committee was to chair the Sunday morning speaker and be the host for the weekend for this speaker. And Joe was a dynamic man and a very spiritual man. And now Tim and I went over to the airport to pick him up. Like I said, I was going to be his host. And we went to where they were onboarding the plane, and this guy came off the plane, and he automatically came toward me, and I automatically went toward him. You know, that's just the way it happened. And I met Joe, and we talked for a few minutes, and he was so peaceful. And that whole weekend, you know, I took him to dinner, we talked, and Joe introduced me to what he called the 10th step promise. And I'm gonna tie that into what we're talking about tonight. Joe's sponsor had him and do his 10th step on a regular basis. He called it a walking around step, and he carried a notebook. And anything came up that he needed to address and possibly make amends to, he would write it down. And Joe asked me about the 10th step promise. I had no idea what he was talking about. And he pointed it out that in the 10th step, it says we cease fighting anything and anybody, even alcohol, because by this time sanity has returned. And what we're talking about tonight in the second step is, you know, if the pain of lead up power greater than me could restore me to sanity. So I found out from Joe and from my sponsor and from other people in Alcoholics Anonymous is what I do from the second step to the 10th step that allows sanity to return. I get the alcohol out of the way, I get me out of the way, I put God back in my life. I take a real big inventory of myself, discuss it with my sponsor, find out what has been blocking me off from the spirit, sunlight of the spirit, as the book says, and then ask God to help me to remove these things, and then I can go on and make the amends to the people that had harmed as a result of my alcoholism. And the other guy that I was talking about I think about in this chapter here. I was in a book study on Monday night. There's a good book study, several book studies in Suffolk. One's at Presbyterian Church on Constance Road and Broad Street on Monday night, 8:00. And I used to go to that one until I started going to the jail meeting on Monday night. And Wallace was a man who got sober in Meridian, Mississippi, and I loved to be with Wallace. My sponsor sponsored Wallace. And I had the opportunity to be with Wallace a lot of times, of course, Wallace and Tom and Tom's wife, Hilda, and Wallace's wife, Edwina, and I. I didn't have a driver's license, so I rode with a lot of people to meetings. And I'd sit in the back seat, and I'd hear those Al-Anon and AA conversations. And Wallace loved the big book. He was a big book thumper. And Wallace was sitting in that meeting one night, and he said, you know, we were reading out of the We Agnostics. He said, you know, Bill didn't name this chapter those of us who were agnostic. He named it We Agnostics. And I got to thinking about that. I thought I knew what an agnostic was, but I was unsure about that. I was unsure. So I went home and I looked up the word agnostic, and I'm glad I did. because part of the definition is unsure. Yeah. And since then, I've always had a dictionary. Jack Carl, the credit group, and Steve Rocher, real big on dictionaries, and I had an opportunity to talk to them early on, and they got me hooked up on being sure I had a dictionary, so I could, if I didn't understand something, I needed to look it up, and I'm grateful for that. Like I said, I always believed in God, just didn't pay God any mind. To be doomed an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis, not always easy alternatives to face. And I had a good friend when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. He was an ex-Methodist minister, and his name was Gary. And I thought the world of Gary. And Gary and I were picking up white chips together for a long time. And Gary was a man of God. He had preached for a number of years. And I remember leaving the Tuesday night meeting when he used to meet at Magnolia Methodist Church. And Gary saw me in the hall. He said, "Buster, you know, you and I, if we keep doing this thing, we'll be old timers together." You know. And what was happening was Gary pick up a white chip, I'd pick up a white chip, I go get drunk, Gary go get drunk. We kept coming back in, you know, and picking up white chips. I finally got to the point where I stayed, thank God. And Gary could not, you know, stay sober. And I liked Gary, and I liked listening to what Gary had to say. And he was a very peaceful man also. And he'd sit in meetings with bib overalls on, a flannel shirt, and he'd share. And I loved to listen to Gary share. A lot of times he'd be half drunk, but he made a lot of sense. And I was at work one day, and I got a phone call, and it was Gary. And Gary said, "Buster, you know, I just wish I could be like y'all. I'd be like you." And I said, "What do you mean, Gary?" He said, "Well, you're sober, and you're an Alcoholics Anonymous." And I said, "Well, you can be too." He said, "But yeah, I wish I could be like you." And then he said something I didn't know how to take. He said, "But I'm cursed with intelligence." I didn't know how to take that. You know, I didn't know how to take it. But long story short, you know, Gary was a man of God who had lost the way. And he couldn't stop drinking. This is a powerful, cunning, baffling, powerful disease, and he couldn't get away from it. And Gary died an alcoholic death. I had a friend, a guy sponsored, went up to see him the last days, and all swollen, and he died an alcoholic death. And I really regret that. But my sponsor said to me early in sobriety that some will die so that others will live, and I didn't like that. I didn't like what it sounded like. I didn't like what I felt when he said that. But it's been the case for me. I've seen a number of people, like a lot of us in here, die from this disease. You know, some just can't get it. And I'm gonna stop right now. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I'm Valerie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Val.
And I'd like to thank Amy and Brad for dragging me out of the beach scene. Back to my old stomping ground down here by Old Dominion and Ghent area. Just a little bit about me. I got sober. My sobriety date is February 11th, 1984. I got sober at 24 years old and walked into my first AA meeting and haven't ever taken another drink. I don't think it's a wonder. I think it is a miracle. So I would like to... First of all, I love the part about we just cannot entirely quit. If when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take. I had little control. I was not a daily drinker, but when I drank, I couldn't control it. And I knew something was very wrong with me. I came to Old Dominion when I was 17. And when I left my parents' house and got to be down here without any people supervising me, I immediately had blackouts. People started commenting on my drinking, and I started getting thrown in Norfolk City Jail, pretty much. Like, I went from who's who among high school students and captain of my field hockey team and tennis team, I mean, just rolling it, to drunk tank in Norfolk City Jail. something was very wrong, and I was very, very scared. It is an illness, because I would never wish that upon anyone. I don't think that's the way to start off when you move away from home. And it's just so scary. It's that merry-go-round, and I'm like, I'm so young. Why can't I drink like my friends? Why can't I drink like other people when I go to those keg parties? I believe genetically I'm predisposed, but most of us are. Sometimes it skips generations when you're here long enough and you start doing your family matrix and figuring it all out and maybe asking questions when you go home to visit people who aren't in denial. Not everybody's willing to talk to you about great-grandma or great-grandpa or it is an illness. The problem is I just kept throwing that poison down myself, so it's hard to feel sorry for somebody when they're, you know, activating their illness. I grew up with a religion. I grew up in the Catholic Church, and I loved the Lord. I loved God. Around this time, I had two DUIs in 4 months at Old Dominion, as I look at my ODU girls over there, and I was so ashamed of myself, I stopped praying. All the self-help books, it says a mere code of morals and a better philosophy of life. I really tried to be a good girl. And what I found out when I came into AA, once I admitted I couldn't take the first drink, was that I was a sick girl learning to become well, learning to become whole. I was not bad girl, good girl. I had to really let go of some of that stuff. I did bad things when I was drinking. Now they don't seem so bad. They're all over the TV. I'm like, whoa, sure glad they didn't have that when I was at school. So I had to drop some of those labels for myself and realize, you know, a lot of times they equated it to, if you're allergic to shellfish, you don't pick up the first clam because you'll break out, you can't breathe, you'll have to go. Kind of the same thing for me. I used to sneak into the ODU library and try and read self-help books and books about alcoholism, and then I'd be afraid somebody would see me and I'd quickly shut it. I think the reason I tell you these things is insanity was picking up that first drink. I thought it was the 12th beer that got me drunk. That first beer just sets off a cycle for me that I don't know what's going to happen. And a lot of times it was drunken public arrests. It was not pretty for me. I was pretty hard and fast, beat up head to toe by the Norfolk police. I mean, this is the late 70s. You didn't sue the police for police brutality. That's just the way it was. So no matter how hard I tried and no matter how good a student I was, Monday through Thursday, bad stuff happened. Lack of power. I had no idea it was my lack of power was my dilemma. When I came to AA, I was very relieved to hear people talk about God. I believe alcohol was a power greater than me. Certainly it overtook everything I did, my thought process, my actions, my morals. And when I came here and admitted I was powerless over alcohol, my life became unmanageable. They say, you come to, which means I'm going to meetings, I'm buying myself time, and I'm listening. I'm not talking, I'm not raising my hand, I'm new, I'm not even picking up a white chip, but I'm showing up every day at a meeting. I make a plan, I go to work, I do this, I go to that meeting. And I listened, and I started to really understand that, you know, I believed people in AA. If all these people really aren't leaving the meeting and going to drink, which I kind of thought when I first got here, these people are staying sober, and I met people with all kinds of lengths of sobriety, and I believed them. You know, I had people in my family, some people I knew. My dad started telling me a lot of stories. Just a quick story. We had a tenant. We owned rental property. She started a fire in a blackout. My dad said, you know, if you don't do something about your drinking, I'm going to have to evict you. Well, I started fires at Old Dominion. I passed out while I was cooking on the stove. And I was so passed out, my roommate heard me coughing. And the fire department came. I could have, you know, burned a five-girl house down. Anyway, I didn't tell my dad that I identified with the story, but that is insane. I would never think of harming my best friends or burning a house down. Anyway, this woman got sober. And when I got sober, I went to see her. I was about 5 months sober. And I used to sell that woman Girl Scout cookies. And here I am, I'm, you know, 24 years old, and I told her I was an alcoholic too. And we just sat there and talked. All those things, that is not of me, it's of a power greater than me. And I find that power in all kinds of things. I think this church is so beautiful. I mean, how can I not feel the presence of a power greater than myself in just, you know, beautiful places of worship? So I have to open my heart up. I have to listen, and I have to listen to other people share their experience, strength, and hope. One of the things I love so much, maybe I hit a little plateau in my program. One of the beauties of being in this program and being active in AA is to watch people walk in here dead. And when I say dead, the lights are on and nobody's home, or however that goes. That's a great 80s song. The lights are on, but no one's home, yeah. And you watch them, their skin clears up. They might say hi, they're not shaking. They might hold themselves a little bit better. They're carrying a book. And you just watch people come back to life. Who's that? Who is that? That's not a self-help book. That is a power greater than myself and all of us. I mean, I sit here in this room full of just all walks, shapes, sizes, socioeconomic class. And I, you know, I've been sober 33 years and I still get blown away by, like, especially this group. I feel like I should be sitting with them because, you know, my story was I just killed it at Old Dominion University. We didn't have sober dorms. We didn't have all that. I love what's happened in the world over the years and how, you know, everything's really kind of embraced recovery. So what I say is define what is your sanity and your insanity. And when I sponsor people, I have them write down, what do you want this new higher power? What do you want this new power to look like for you? Just write it all down. You can get rid of that old stuff. We can rip it up. You can keep it in a column. But really look at it. Put pen to paper and look at it, and we go over it. And so as you go through the steps, remember, a power greater than you is going to restore you to sanity. And the other thing they told me is, I love this, you know, trying the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And you can equate that to anything in your life. Eating bad food and expecting to lose weight. You know, taking a drink and expecting not to black out, expecting to be a normal drinker. That made a lot of sense, and it makes a lot of sense to me today. I've carried it into so many different areas of my life. So with that, I'll end my little share right now. Thank you.
Thanks, Beth.
Okay.
All right, page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. Lester.
Yeah, I don't think I qualify myself. I'm going to do that now. I had my last drink April 19, 1992, sitting on a toilet in the bathroom of my mother's house. All the Miller High Life was gone. All the Smirnoff was gone. All the Wild Irish Rose was gone. All I had was a bottle of NyQuil. And that was 20-some percent alcohol, and I drank that because I wanted that that alcohol and that cold medicine to do for me what all the beer, liquor, and wine had done for me in the past. And that's to make me feel different, see the world different, see you different, see me different, you know. And my home group is the Suffolk Discussion group that meets at St. Paul's Episcopal Church Fellowship Hall, 213 North Main Street in Suffolk, Virginia. We do our best to practice the fifth tradition and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. We got good coffee, good cookies. We'd love to have you. And come on by if you're in that area. You know, on a previous page, too, I want to comment on that. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. You know, insanity for me was making decisions based on lies. You know, I tell myself, first lie, I'm only going to drink one. The second lie, ain't going to be as bad this time. And there's a third line that comes in there occasionally, and that is, it ain't my fault. And so, you know, I would lie to myself, and I would lie to you, and I lied to my family, particularly the one where I said, I'm not going to do it anymore. And then I come through the front door, stumble across the coffee table, and they look at me with them eyes and say, my God, he's done it again, you know. And I hate that. I really do. You know, to find a power greater than ourselves is what this, you know, enable to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problems. Exactly what this book is about. And in the foreword to the first edition, it talks about, you know, this is, it helps us to do precisely what the first 100 did. You know, my mama made the best chocolate cake in the world. And we tried our best to find that recipe when she passed away, and I can't find it. You know, but she made the best chocolate cake. And we tried, my sister tried, my cousins tried to make the same cake and couldn't do it because we didn't have the recipe. And this book is the recipe for sobriety for me. In that first 164 pages, if I do what these people had done prior to me and what's outlined in this book, I'll find that power greater than me. If we find Mama's recipe, we're going to have a good chocolate cake again, too, because I love that chocolate cake. And, I was brought up in the Baptist church, you know, and dated a young lady in high school, and she went to the Presbyterian church. So I went to Presbyterian Church, and I became vice president of the youth fellowship. You know, after high school and after that relationship was gone, I met a young lady. She was Roman Catholic. We got to dating when I was old Dominion, and we eventually got married. You know, my drinking escalated in that marriage. But I knew she wasn't going to leave because she was Roman Catholic. But after she left me, you know, I got sober and I met another young lady, and she went to the Episcopal Church, okay? And we got married on the beach down at Virginia Beach. You know, and what I'm trying to say is that I'm familiar with the God of the churches, you know? And the answer was in each one of those churches. You know, there was something greater than me that could work in my life if I allowed it to, you know, to get myself out of the way and to have faith in something, you know, that would work for me. And I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they tell me, well, you got personal anonymity, but you can also have spiritual anonymity. It's a God of your own understanding. And to define your own conception of God. And I'll never forget sitting with Bill Williams. And Bill, the people in here remember Bill. Bill was an ex-Navy SEAL, and my sponsor sponsored Bill. And Bill was a very avid, very active in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time, and passed on. And be sitting with Bill, and we would talk about our power greater than ourselves. And I share, you know, what I believed, and he would share what he believed, but he would tell me, when I talk to those that I sponsor, I tell them, you've got to find your own conception of God because mine might get you drunk. You know, the spiritual anonymity. The like I said, the God of the churches were there, you know, but I had to get beat down by alcohol. I had to get beat down by alcohol before I reached out and said, I need help. I need help. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard people talking about a God of the understanding, but the power was in the rooms too, like I said before. And I believed in God. And one And this chapter here helped me to look at old ideas. And it was a long time. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for a while when I realized that one of my old ideas was the fact that I believed in God, and I thought that was the same thing as relying on God. And it won't. I was believing on God and relying on me, and that's not a good recipe. You know, things just don't, you know, and when I see somebody today and they say, Buster, how are you doing today? I said, doing fine, as long as I stay out of the way. You know, and guys I've talked to that I sponsor, you know, stay in today and stay out of the way. That's what we do. You know, put God in charge. And that, you know, I seek God's will. As soon as my eyes open up in the morning, I thank God for letting me be alive and sober and in AA and in recovery. I thank him for my family, thank him for my family's good health and my good health, and that's when I'm laying in bed. And then I roll out of bed onto my knees and sound like a bowl of Rice Krispies, snap, crackle, and pop. And I keep on thanking God for this day and for the things that he's blessed me with, particularly being in AA and being able to put my hand back out and help somebody find the hope that I found, you know. You know, Wallace also told me about prayer and meditation, about prayer, speaking with God, meditation, listen to God. And the second part I have a hard time with because I have a jackrabbit mind. And it wants to go in different places all the time. And to get still takes a lot of effort on my part to listen. But, I have a God I'm understanding today. Let's see. Regained the sanity. You know, I kept telling people I won't go and drink anymore. You know, the first time I went to the hospital for my alcoholism, I was picked up by an undercover policeman and somebody I worked with and took to the hospital. And they put me in that little room that doesn't have a handle on the inside and had me wrapped to that thing that I can't keep closed in front, can't keep it closed in the back, and it, you know, and I'm running around with it, and it's trying to choke me, and I almost choked myself to death, and they came in and got me out. And I stayed in that room for a considerable amount of time, and in the hospital for 28 days, you know. And my mother came to see me, and I pleaded with her. I was shaking so bad. I pleaded with her, please bring me something to drink, Mama. Please bring me something to drink. Buster, it's a hospital. I can't do that. And I hit her and fell out in front of her with an alcoholic seizure. You know, I'm not proud of that. And to tell you what willpower would do, and to tell you, you know, the fear of dying from alcoholism did not get me sober. The willpower did not get me sober. I'm sitting on the side of the bed, and the doctor comes up and sits beside me. Suppose you've been a very sick person. I'll tell you right now, if you drink again, you're going to die. I said, Doc, don't worry. I will never drink again. I meant it with every fiber of my being. And the fear of dying and all that willpower that I exercised. When I got out of the hospital, my aunt said, Buster, I thought you had more willpower than that. And I said, I do. Aunt Byrne, I do. And I'm not going to drink anymore. And 3 months later, I was as drunk as I've ever been in my life. Mm. You know, the fear of dying from this disease didn't get me sober. And all that willpower that I tried to muster didn't work. My sponsor told me, my first sponsor, Tom, bless his heart, we talked about willpower. I said, Buster, willpower is about as useless for you as a piece of wet toilet paper. It's just not going to work. And thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. I got in Alcoholics Anonymous and got involved with the steps and working. And it is a spiritual program. And he helped me understand that it's all spiritual. You know, that I think it says in front of the 12 and 12, a group of principles spiritual in nature, which is practiced as a way of life, could relieve the obsession to drink and make me happy and usefully whole. I was never happy and usefully whole. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I tried to connect with this God of my understanding. You know, if you'd asked me what spirituality was when I first came here, to have a strong Southern Baptist ring. You know, today it doesn't. You know, I'm grateful that I act different, feel different, I think different, I treat people differently. And like I said, I act different. A lot of people are grateful for that, you know. And I'm starting to ramble up. I'll finish. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to stay in the book so I stay focused. I think that's what they call undiagnosed ADHD, Buster. back in your days, they just called it hyperkinetic and too much sugar. That's what they actually thought it was. But, you know, the part about higher power and Bill Wilson, and I'm not great about the historical events, but he met that guy, Ebby, and Ebby had quit drinking, and he couldn't believe Ebby just looked so different. And the Lord found Ebby. I don't think God's ever lost. People say, I found God. Well, God's always been there. It's God found you. So I'm lost. God's not lost. And Ebby found religion, which is how a lot of this stuff got started. But as Bill Wilson believed him, and I'm kind of paraphrasing the whole thing, the word higher power came up. And I just love how higher power has met every person that walks through the rooms of AA all over the world. I've been to meetings all over the world, on the islands, everywhere, and everybody, AA meets you right where you're at. Right where you're at. Whether you've been in a cult, whether you've been brainwashed, whether your parents were whatever, you get to come in here and say, AA says this, and I'm gonna do what the book says. Give it a try. They told me, Valerie, you know, how are things working out your way? Not so good. You want to give this a shot. Okay, what do I have to lose? I have nothing to lose to try this. I know I have many friends who, they call it buffet AA. They picked this and they picked that. And I just maybe went back and took a little more, but they skipped a lot of stuff that they didn't like. The steps aren't a buffet. You can hang out on a step. Take your time on a step. It's not a race. It's a journey. I revisit. I plug in these steps all the time, every day of my life. And it works. So if there's somebody that you see in a meeting and you're like, I kind of like that faith or how that person talks, ask them to go have coffee, hang out with them. How did you do that? You know, get one-on-one with people and figure some things out. That's what this is about. You're on your journey. And all our journeys look a little bit different, but they're all recovery. And we all don't drink one day at a time. Okay, that's it.
All right. We're continuing on page 47. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
Okay, I'll go first this time. That's I just want to show you something. Buster's book is like five. He wrote his own book in the sides. I have a lot of highlights, but I don't have that much writing, Buster. I like that. And this is my original big book, which was so awful. People make fun of it on the outside. I grabbed the brown paper back and I covered it this weekend because I knew I was coming here. But that's my original book, and it's my writings from all the decades that I've been sober, and this is the book that makes me feel comfortable in front of me. I could have grabbed a new big book, but this book brings me comfort, and it shows me my journey. I'm a visual person. I like to kind of have symbols in my life, and this talks about a cornerstone. So for me, that's the corner, and then it says this whole beautiful spiritual structure gets built. So what that's telling me is I'm going to build this beautiful spiritual structure. For me, it just continues, and the structure can go up, it can go to the sides. But that is my remedy for my alcoholism, is that little mustard seed of faith. That's all I needed, was to say, as it says in the book, okay, I'm going to believe in a power greater than myself. And that's the cornerstone on which we start moving and building our life in a spiritual realm, in recovery, and get a life, which is, I love the part about the firing line of life. So it helps us, it helped me plant strong roots in AA, which for me, the stronger your roots, then you fly. You fly and you really find out what you're all about as a recovering alcoholic, not, you know, falling down drunk and all that stuff like I did. So that's it, Buster.
Thank you. This book is very dear to me. It's presented to me. My first sponsor, Tom, it was presented to him in 1991 when he spoke in Jackson Mill, West Virginia. And when I was sober 3 years, he gave it to me. And I use it. And I love book studies. I really do. And I make notes all the time because I'm constantly hearing something that helps me understand, you know, what I need to understand about, you know, in recovery. You know, do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe? And I've always believed in God. I just didn't pay him any mind. And I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get reacquainted with God, and the relationship with God grows, and I'm given instructions in step 11 as to how to start my day, end my day, and to keep this contact with something greater than me on a daily basis. You know, I came here and I was hurting. You know, I was truly hurting, and I asked God, the simplest prayer I've ever used in my life, God, please help me. And God was there. And I go to meetings and I listen to people. This also, in going to meetings and hear people talk about how God works in their life, you know. And I ask for God's will in my life every day. But in my mind, I might have plan A, plan B, and plan C for it. You know, option one, option two, and option three, God, this is what I'm thinking about. What are you thinking about? But, I try to get out of the way and let God's will work in my life. And I've heard a lot of things that have helped me with this. You know, Dr. Martin B. Several years ago spoke at our Oceanfront Conference, and he said something that struck me. He said, God's will for me is my will for me if I just had all the facts. And that's where faith comes in, faith in something greater than me. And I sit in these rooms and I listen to people share. And the fact that it works in their life. You know, that I heard a young lady, I don't know how old she was very young, at a Saturday night meeting in Suffolk say, faith is hope with a track record. And I understood that, you know, because I'm sitting here and I'm listening to people share their experience, strength, and hope, and how God works in their life. And my God, you know, when I'm faced with something, and I hear somebody share how they had a similar circumstance going on in their life, and they worked through it with God's help, and that just increases my faith and boosts my faith. And like I said, I've always believed in God, just didn't pay him any mind. And I got beat down by alcohol. And I think she was talking about Abby. I think Abby brought him some other reading material too. I think one of them might have been Bill when he was getting sober. William James' Varieties of Religious Experience. Mm-hmm. And it says the common denominator for all spiritual awakenings is pain and utter hopelessness. And I identified with that. I had the pain and I was hopeless when I came here. And I was receptive to the power that I found working in these rooms, which helped me to increase that faith in something that I had as a kid, you know. I'll never forget, I'd be on my knees praying, and I thought I'd never get it right. I kept saying the prayer over and over. My mother walked by my bedroom door and slapped the door and said, Buster, you sound like a broken record. But I wanted to get it right. Mm. And I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and yeah, little by little, you know, the effort that I put into developing that relationship with God on a regular basis, on a daily basis, I get in rooms like this and I hear you share, and it just strengthens what I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Continuing on page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did.
Okay. I just had a thought, and I have so many friends in AA, but one of my friends, he loves the word his creator. And I think that's a beautiful word, so maybe I can say my creator too. It's so all-encompassing, and I want to focus. I don't want to go ahead on the steps. So I just really want to focus on came to believe that a power greater than myself, and at first I look up to that power, but now it's in my heart, and it's everywhere, can restore me to sanity. And I like to be sane. I like to have soundness of mind. Even if I make a decision that maybe I rethink later, I have soundness of mind. The things I did when I put alcohol in me were not sound. They were not sane. Running around the streets of Norfolk in blackouts for 10 hours is not sanity. Yada yada, you know. So keep it simple. Keep it as simple as you need to. And I think really one of the keys is, you know, the meetings after the meetings where, and you grab someone, it could be male or female. You just want to talk to them about this higher power thing. You know, get outside of your comfort zone a little bit. This is what AA is about, really getting outside your comfort zone, meeting different people, and listen to the message. Don't look at the messenger. Close your eyes if you have to. And then one of the things I like to do in my program is every day I ask myself, how's God shown up in my life? And I'll just say, higher power. Oh, okay. Little things, and start getting a sense of, like, a sixth sense, an intuition. Something's going on more than me here. The synchronicity, the coincidences that we know now, no coincidence. That's a God moment. That's a higher power moment. So start looking for it. Your higher power will be there. And just have fun, you know, have fun with it. This isn't glum. This isn't meant to beat us up. The old life was bad enough. Have fun. Did you get all green lights? I like to go, thank you, God. I got a lot of red lights coming here. I was like, oh, shoot. I don't believe that's God. I just believe that's the city of Norfolk light stream. But, you know, start and write it down. Write it down. Put it in your, you know, iPhone, whatever it is, however you keep notes. And enjoy the ride of sobriety. Don't take yourself so seriously. That's it.
Thanks, Phil.
I went to a meeting down at Outer Banks when I was early in sobriety. And I forget where it was, but anyhow, I walked in, and my sponsor was down there. And a couple other people from the Suffolk area were down at this meeting. And this, and I don't know why he picked me, but this guy with gray hair, gray on mine is now, but came up to me and tapped me on the shoulder and asked me, had I ever heard of the bedevilments? I said, no, I was new to sobriety. He had a second edition big book under his arm. He pulled it out and turned it to page 52 and started reading it at bedevilments. I said, that's interesting, you know. I went back home, and I got a friend of mine who's in a program named Scott. I said, Scott, have you ever heard of the bedevilments? And so I pulled out my book and turned to page 52. And he said, no, I haven't. He said, but what he did was he took these, the bedevilments and went to the promises, and he matched the promises to the bedevilments. If you get a chance, do that sometime, because you can do that. You know, these bedevilments, the answers and the solution is fine, and they come true in the promises. Now we've had people come to my home group, and we'll sit in there and say, well, look, I know I've got a problem with alcohol, but my life is not unmanageable. and the half the room will laugh, you know, because they understand, you know. And I've had people that I've tried to help that have, you know, say, well, you know, I got a problem with drinking. I drink too much. I do this. I do that. But my life is not unmanageable. So I say, well, come over here, and we sit at the table, and we turn to page 52. And I start reading the benevolence. I said, we were having trouble with personal relationships. Start shaking his head. We couldn't control our emotional natures. Keep shaking his head. We were a prey to misery and depression. Shaking the head. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness, and we were full of fear. We were unhappy. And by the time we get through reading the bedevilments, they say, okay, maybe you got a point. Maybe my life is unmanageable. And then we start talking about what the solution is, not only to drinking, but what, you know, drinking was a symptom. And we get down to causes and conditions and get into that plan program of recovery that we have here. I don't know what that guy saw at me. You know, maybe he thought I needed to look at the bedevilments, but I'm glad he did, you know. Because anytime anybody can help me with what this plan for recovery to understand something, and I do, I write notes all the time, hit in my 12 and 12, and in particular in the big book, because this is a plan program of recovery. And when anybody, you know, asks me to help them, you know, I not only share my experience, but I share what others have shared with me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Buster.
I'm just going to quickly read the last couple of paragraphs from the second appendix called Spiritual Experience, page 568. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. Okay, we are gonna pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Yes.
Hi, everybody. My name is Stephen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Steve. Steve.
I'm working with the Council of Alcoholics Anonymous, presents gratitude in action. It's a day of service, and the delegate comes down and gives his report. It's a wonderful day. It is June 17th at 11:30 to 3 o'clock at 531 Raleigh Avenue, which is right across the street. It is being hosted this week by the 14th, so it's a wonderful day. If you haven't ever been to a gratitude in action event, please come out. It's a great day. And I have another one. The 67th BAC convention is going to be held August 25th through the 27th at the Hilton Garden Inn and Conference Center in at 100 East Constant Road in greater downtown Suffolk. The registration fee is $30 before June 30th and $35 after that. Room rates are $119 per night. And I suggest that if you are planning on going to the convention, staying at the Hilton, to make your reservations early. There aren't that many rooms at this hotel, so make your reservations early. The deadline for early registration is July 24th. Please plan to attend. Thank you.
Thanks. Yes.
My name is Will Traney. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello.
I'm a
trusted servant seated to my left, John Deed, celebrating 80 years this Thursday night at 8 o'clock at the Friends of Bill W. Home Group in Suffolk. It's out on Route 460 at Providence United Methodist Church. Keely R. is the speaker, and there should be cake.
Thank you. Yes.
Hi, my name is Brittany. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Brittany.
Downtown Young and Sober is having a workshop on May 6th, and it's Spring into Action. It's in downtown Norfolk. If you want any details,
I would be remiss. My name is Steve. I'm an alcoholic. This Hi, Friday Steve. Night at St. Paul's Episcopal Church that meets on Main Street in Greater Downtown Suffolk. Buster H. will be celebrating his 25th anniversary. And it's an 8 o'clock meeting, and Bob Edwards, I use his last name because he does, from Gloucester will be the speaker. It'll be a dynamic meeting. Please come on out and help celebrate.
Thank you, Steve. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
I'm Katie, alcoholic.
Hi, Katie. Hi. Welcome. Yes.
I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Adam. Adam. Welcome.
Hey, everyone. Travis, alcoholic.
Hey, Travis. Welcome. Literature is available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can outside, provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Would you all please thank the panel again with me for sharing? Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd Street. Who would like to volunteer to read the last two? Great, Melissa.
My name is Melissa, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Melissa.
Our book is meant to be suggestive of us. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, we have a nice way of closing.
Who never misses a meeting? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you, David.